The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Good afternoon. This is the Friday Report. We've got three of the island's leading voices. Over the next 40 minutes, we're going to be talking about some of the news that's been making the headlines on the Isle of Wight over the past week. It will include talk of the cabinet reshuffle, the executive reshuffle at the Isle of Wight Council. We'll talk about the future of the Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service. We'll talk the Scottish referendum, tourism on the Isle of Wight, and how a four-year-old boy has been taking on a killer cycling challenge. All that coming up over the next 40 minutes or so. You can have your say this afternoon. You can find us on text IW space message. Send it into 81222. And on Twitter, head to @iWhiteRadio. Hashtag Friday Report.
The Friday Report, getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio.
I'm going to say a big good afternoon to three gentlemen, all leading voices on the island. Good afternoon to you.
Hello.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So let's just do, if we may, a little bit of an introduction. Mark, if I can start with you.
Yeah, Mark Chiverton, I'm Branch Secretary of Unison Trade Union, representing workers in the public sector and also Vice Chair of the Isle of Wight Labour Party.
And on to Steve.
Steve Stubbings, Deputy Leader of the Isle of Wight Council.
And not last, but no means least.
Yes, least.
David.
Hello, David Thornton. I'm the Chief Executive of the best holiday destination on the planet.
Start as you mean to go on. That's what I like to hear. Well, gentlemen, what we thought we'd start with today is probably the biggest issue, not only of the week, but possibly of the last decade, really, the Scottish referendum. We didn't really know what way it was going to go today. It could have gone either way. We could have been having a very, very different discussion than we are. Scotland is staying in the UK. 55% rejected independence. Cameron says it's been settled for a generation. But is it, and also, does it mean, if it does mean anything, what does it mean for the Isle of Wight? The Prime Minister has now promised to devolve more powers to the Scottish Parliament, says it's also time that millions of voices of England must be heard. Meanwhile, over at the Yes camp, Alex Hammond saying the high turnout, which topped 90% in some places, has been a triumph for the democratic process. Before we chat about the issues, let's just hear from some of those leaders and what they've been saying today.
The Unionist parties made vows late in the campaign to devolve more powers to Scotland. Scotland will expect these to be honoured in rapid course.
Now the debate has been settled for a generation, or as Alex Salmond has said, perhaps for a lifetime. So there can be no disputes, no reruns. We have heard the settled will of the Scottish people. Scotland voted for a stronger Scottish Parliament backed by the strength and security of the United Kingdom. Now it is time for our United Kingdom to come together and to move forward. A vital part of that will be a balanced settlement, fair to people in Scotland, and importantly, to everyone in England, Wales and Northern Ireland as well.
Scotland has, by majority, decided not at this stage to become an independent country. I accept that verdict of the people and I call on all of Scotland to follow suit in accepting the democratic verdict of the people of Scotland.
Just as the people of Scotland will have more power over their affairs, so it follows that the people of England, Wales and Northern Ireland must have a bigger say over theirs. The rights of these voters need to be respected, preserved and enhanced.
This was a vote for solidarity and social justice. This was a vote for our National Health Service. This was a vote for our welfare state. This was a vote for no, because we know we are better together.
The voice of Labour leader Ed Miliband finishing there, Prime Minister David Cameron and Scotland's First Minister Alex Salmond. So, Scotland has voted no. Gentlemen, your thoughts?
Well, if I go first, Mark Chiverton, just to first of all, obviously this has had huge coverage and there's been long debate over many months and years, and plainly this is a matter for the people of Scotland rather than for me operating 400 miles away, really. But I think from a personal point of view, I am very pleased that the Scottish people have voted to stay within the United Kingdom. I think that's good. I think it's best for them. I think it's best for the whole nation in terms of shared wealth and some of the uncertainties that have been generated by the move to independence. And I'm also pleased that it's been a decisive result in terms, because I think a knife edge result would have caused quite a lot of division, really. I think it is very important now that the implications of it are considered rapidly, but the implications for the rest of the country, Wales, Northern Ireland, in terms of further devolution either to English regions, cities, or to councils. And I think it is very important that the Isle of Wight potentially plays its part in that, because there have already been calls from a number of council leaders saying that they want more powers for local councils, more adequate funding to deal with the services and statutory requirements that are put on them. And I think this is an opportunity for a nationwide debate to make sure that there is a balanced settlement, to use the words that some people are using, but also we need to use that to ensure that local democracy is vibrant, councils have the powers they need, but also the resources they need as well.
Steve Stubbings, David Thornton, does it mean anything for the Isle of Wight?
David, do you mind?
No, after you, Steve.
Thanks. I don't think it does mean a huge amount to us. I would like to start by complimenting the people of Scotland for engaging in the democratic process. 90% turnout is phenomenal. And we could do with some of that down here sometimes in our elections. And I think what it illustrates to me is a clear, real interest on the part of the people of Scotland in this specific debate. And we probably need to start getting the people involved in discussions on matters about which they're interested. As far as what it'll do for the Isle of Wight specifically, I don't see a huge amount. I'm not even persuaded what happens in London actually has a huge amount of influence here. I occasionally attend conferences and seminars in London. They tend to be very London-centric. Sure, there's the green shoots of recovery all around that area because of various advantages that they have over us. But I think the Isle of Wight is a very particular area in terms of our economy and how things work here. And I would really like to see, as Marcus said, much more of an opportunity for us to find a fairer deal for the regions like us coming out of this discussion.
David, does it mean anything? And also, I understand that Scottish islands sometimes get a better deal than maybe English islands when it comes to things like trade and sort of extra grants and things. Is there an element there that maybe the island is going to be affected?
Yeah, well, I think from a tourist point of view, there's been a case for a number of years where the further away you are from London, seemingly, the more subsidy and support that you get. And I worked in the Midlands a few years ago with a tourist destination that had no money from central government, and yet up the road in the Lake District they had £20 million to spend on a marketing campaign in London. You know, I think that's unfair, and I think there's an element of this. And my worry about what will now happen is that concessions will be made if we're not careful, and we will find that potentially the south and the south coast and the Isle of Wight might be disadvantaged in some way. But you know, I take some other things from it. I mean, firstly, I think the engagement thing is a massive lesson to learn. There was a bunch of people voting about something that they passionately thought was important. What I take from that at the moment is when we have elections in Britain, people aren't passionately thinking that the issues are important. And I think politicians therefore need to just maybe have a look themselves about what are the key important things in life, you know, that make people get out of bed and want to go and vote, you know. But also, I think from a tourist point of view, Great Britain is a great brand. And just in the way that we would say here on the Isle of Wight, it's not about Ventnor, it's not about Ryde, it's not about Shanklin, it's about all the destinations working together to be greater than the sum of the parts. The same is also true about Great Britain, that Great Britain stands for as an iconic destination to the rest of the world. And we may still benefit from that by keeping that great British unity together. And I hope that we will be seen as one of those leading destinations within Great Britain now that that brand stays intact.
Let's talk some statistics here. The turnout has been incredible. 55% to the no, 44.7% to the yes. But the big winner, it is a massive turnout. You compare that to the Isle of Wight local election in 2013. 35.4%. I mean, you know, it kind of begs the question, can you justify being in power on the Isle of Wight with that kind of turnout when you see that?
It's not a fair question, because if the vote on the Isle of Wight was, should the Isle of Wight be independent, I'm sure you would get a very high response from a local resident. See, you can't really compare it with a sort of normal political council election, really.
I think that's right. I think often in terms of single issues, I think people can easily, more easily understand that rather than at an election time when it's on a package of things and a whole range of other factors come into play. I think historically, it is a difficulty because turnout in elections has gone down massively from what it was in the immediate post-Second War, World War period. And it's less, it's actually higher here on the Isle of Wight than in many other places. And I think often people have got quite tired of politicians of all parties. I think people feel that every more and more effort is and money is put into branding, and everyone's kind of almost positioning themselves for a few mythical floating voters in marginal constituencies. And I think that, combined with other scandals around expenses, has disillusioned people. I think it's great that people have been really enthused over the Scottish referendum. I think really what people want to see is politicians out there saying what they mean, meaning what they say, and then I think people might be better re-engaged in the political process.
Steve, what can we do to engage people in local elections?
Oh, Lucy, I wish I knew. You know, it's something I've been working at since I've been involved in local politics 4 or 5 years now. I think Mark's just brought something very interesting into the discussion, and that is a real sense of disillusionment with politics per se. I think people don't really see much of a difference between any of the opposing parties on a national level. I think the way to engage people at a local level is to engage them in local issues, which is why I stood on a mandate that I think we should remove party politics from local government, and that's why I'm an island independent. And I think that from the point of view of the interest that I perceive in people on the Isle of Wight, it is about local issues that they are specifically that will affect their lives here. As far as the bigger issues concerned, I don't really see a way forward there, except the parties becoming more like they used to be, where you had a really defined line between what they represent on a national level.
And what about pushing for subsidies? I mean, that's got to come from the Isle of Wight Council. I mean, now that we are here, we've got this no vote. What happens now in terms of making sure the Isle of Wight gets money?
Well, we've just had one really interesting thing happen in regard to the potential for pushing for more cash for the Isle of Wight, and that is Ian Stevens' situation with having just got a chair of one of the fairly major boards. He's now the chair of the LGA board for tourism, culture and sport. Obviously, David will tell us in a second the contribution that tourism makes to the economy of the Isle of Wight. I'm really hopeful that that gives us a seat at a very important table, opportunities to have discussions with at ministerial level. And I know that David met with Ian Stevens just a day or two ago to discuss moving forward in that. I don't know whether you comment on
that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the economy first then, shall we? The tourism economy of the Isle of Wight is roughly, direct is 280 odd million pounds. When you add in the taxi services, the coffees that people buy on the way to the shops, the tourists, etc., it grosses that up to something like 520 million. So it's getting on for a quarter of the island's entire economy and about 28% of the workforce. So that makes it the biggest single private sector, although it's a fragmented private sector, but it's the biggest single thing. So tourism is very important on the island. I think it's brilliant that Ian Stevens has been invited to take this role. It must have been a very difficult decision for him to make, because he clearly has a lot on his plate at the moment. Having said that, you know, he's not the only man who works in County Hall, and there's lots of officers there, and there's lots of other elected officials who are all working together to try and resolve budget issues and all the rest of it, as I understand it. But I think to turn that down would have been madness. It's absolutely brilliant for the Isle of Wight. In terms of our profile, It puts him next to the Duke of Devonshire, the owner of Chatsworth. It puts him alongside Lady Penny Cobham, the chairman of Visit England, board member of Visit Britain. It gives him enormous influence. I don't really... I don't know a great deal about Ian's personal politics, but he does to me come over as a man who's passionate about the Isle of Wight, yeah, who wants the Isle of Wight to succeed, you know, and I am sure it will be a struggle trying to keep everything going. But, you know, you can't turn down an opportunity like that. There are other destinations around the UK that would give their right arm to be sitting in that seat, you know. So I think good luck to him. And I think we should all try and help him, for goodness sake.
But, Mark, a good use of taxpayers' money. He's being paid by council taxpayers on the Isle of Wight to be leader of the Isle of Wight Council. There are allowances for that. And this particular role that he's taken on effectively doubles his salaries. Is that money justified as far as you can see?
Well, I don't want to comment on that money, that particular money issue, because I'd congratulate Ian as well, and I wish him well in the role, and I think he potentially could be in a position of influence there. Ultimately, what he does, whether he does move on from his, you know, from the leader of the council role, remains to be seen. But I wish him well entirely in that role. The only thing that I would say as well, and it's good that he'll have that influence, but without adequate funding for the Isle of Wight in other ways, then plainly there are difficulties. There may be funding streams that he can open up, but at the same time, over recent years, we've seen massive reductions, yeah, in public expenditure for the Isle of Wight. We've got 28 million cuts on the horizon, and the David and his colleagues in terms of the tourism industry and in the tourist in industry itself, plainly, is a very important part of the Isle of Wight economy, which is very dependent on it. Perhaps, you know, some might say sometimes even overly dependent, but it's very important that develops further and we support it. But without adequate funding for other council services, and we a few years ago in terms of cuts, we saw a cut back in terms of tourist information centres, in terms of public toilets, unless we can guarantee adequate beach cleaning, decent parks and amenities, good news about Ventnor Park today, unless we can guarantee all those things as well, decent roads, then this won't easily be an attractive place for people to visit. So it's very important that alongside the work that David's doing, that the private sector's doing, that we've got an adequate level of funding to ensure that the infrastructure is there for people to enjoy.
But don't you think that potentially, you know, Ian having that role, it is one of the ways that perhaps we can get across to London, yeah, the specific needs of the Isle of Wight? Because, you know, I listen to Andrew Turner a lot, you know, he goes up, he tables these motions, you know, bless him, some of them are like 10 o'clock at night when there's two people in the house and it's the only time he can do it. Other times, you know, we do things like White Minster where we raise the profile of the island and it's great. But at the end of the day, the island is uniquely different and challenged from the rest of the UK, and we've got to get that message across to London.
Just on that, you know, and I wasn't looking to counterpose the two things. I mean, sure, I do welcome the fact that Ian's in the role. I'm sure he can open some doors, meet some people, and hopefully get, you know, some more money for us as well. So I wish him well in the role, but nevertheless, in terms of the overall settlement, in terms of finance for the Isle of Wight, in terms of local government, then in my view, we continue to be massively underfunded. But I do congratulate Ian and his colleagues as well in terms of the work they've done in other areas, in terms of assisted area status. I mean, work with the trade unions and others to ensure that some other funding streams come available. I never would doubt Ian's energy, enthusiasm, commitment. I wish him well in the role.
I think some of this is often about profile, and I agree with you, David. I think often it's being in the right place at the right time. And we all know that actually this country isn't broke by any means. There seems to be huge sums of money that is findable for a new railway link between London and some other places. So clearly there is money available. Where it isn't coming to is here. And I think a lot of the reason for that is because we don't sit in the right places, we don't meet with the right people. I think Ian's new opportunity might well be to open some of those doors that haven't been opened to us in the past. And I know because I was peripherally involved in the discussions around the assisted area status, the difficulty we had meeting ministers, even getting ministers to recognise that the Isle of Wight actually existed was a real problem for us. So, frankly, anything we can do to be in those places, in the corridors of power, is all right with me.
But
and
Steve,
I'll look forward
I'm
to seeing where it goes.
I'm going to come back to you on that point of the, you know, the salary and whether Ian's going to be able to maintain both roles there. At the end of the day, you're the deputy leader.
Yeah.
It's going to come back to you if those jobs aren't being done. Has it done that yet? And do you foresee that happening?
I hope so. I'd be more than happy to step in to fulfil some of Ian's roles that he might now struggle to do. We've got a very substantial executive on the Isle of Wight Council. We're well capable of filling in where different people, you know, might not perhaps be able to do all that they've done in the past. Ian and I have worked extremely closely together right from the time that we came in. So I've shadowed him pretty much through this thing, and I'm more than happy to continue in the role of Deputy Leader of the Isle of Wight Council to ensure that things run smoothly any time that he might be away on other duties. But what I do want to focus on, Lucy, is the importance of this role. And whatever people might like to do to talk about the fact that he's going to be earning some money, well, yeah, so he should. Most of us get paid for what we do. You know, that's
but
appropriate.
You mentioned there that there might be a possibility that he might struggle with roles. I mean, surely that
I didn't mention the word struggle, but I take your point.
You did say struggle.
Did
you did say struggle. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you've already got that thought in mind, I mean, does that not beg the question that maybe he takes on this role, which is hugely important, maybe not the council leadership at the same time?
Well, I think the role of the council leadership is up to Ian to decide. If he thinks he can still manage it, then he will.
Yeah,
if at any point
really
in the future he doesn't.
Fair question. You know, I mean, I struggle with my workload on a daily basis, quite frankly. You know, and the more I open my door and consult with more people, the more my inbox fills up and the more we have to do. What you have to do is you have to work smart. You have to deploy your resources effectively, work with your team, pass information down, give people authority to get on with things and trust them to deliver results.
Absolutely.
Measure it, monitor it, put KPIs on it. That's what you have to do.
Just come back on that. I mean, in terms of struggling with workload, I've got to say I could take you to almost every single council department to introduce you to people that, contrary to what the public myth, people are really massively struggling with huge workloads, working very long hours in terms of trying to maintain services. And that is extremely difficult, which kind of leads me back to the point where we started in a way, that what I would want to see in terms of the Scottish referendum result is some serious discussions about what is going to happen about devolved power. Hours for the English regions and councils, but also to make sure that councils generally are adequately funded to undertake the task that they're statutory in place to do. Because central governments of all parties, but particularly I have to say the particular difficulties with the current government, the Tory-led coalition government, has starved councils of the resources that they need. The regulatory framework is ever more complex, the legislative demands are greater, the workload is greater, and yet councils are starved of the funds that they need to adequately provide the services to meet the needs of their population, and also the powers that they have to raise money themselves or access revenue have been seriously limited.
Absolutely.
We've become local administration, really. We're not local government anymore.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, what we're going to do is take a bit of a break here, I think. We'll continue talking about council issues. We'll have a little bit of a break in the meantime. Don't forget you can have your say. Hashtag Friday Report. Find us on Twitter at iWhite Radio. We're also on the text IW space message 81222. And we can put some of your points to the three gentlemen in the studio.
Is the Friday Report.
Good afternoon, welcome back. This is the Friday Report. It's 20 to 2 already and we've got so much to talk about yet. Yeah, joining me in the studio, Mark Chiverton, Steve Stubbings and David Thornton. Welcome back. So we were touching on some of the issues that arose from Wednesday's council meeting. We moved on from the Scottish referendum there and started talking a little bit about Ian Stevens' new role. There were many issues that have arisen from those meetings and unfortunately we haven't got time to talk about everything, which I would love to. We do have to mention the Isle of Wight reshuffle. Some of the top jobs going on Wednesday night, the Isle of Wight Council, as I say, met in its entirety. It has been a tough week for the local authority, still trying to find £28 million in savings. Considerable fallout from that reshuffle. If you remember that Richard Priest was removed from his role heading up Children's Services, replaced by Jonathan Bacon. John Gilby's also gone. He was the member for Finance and Highways. And then their key roles. The island's struggling to improve standards in education, but Richard's departure has come just weeks after Ofsted published a report praising the council and naming Richard for its work in supporting schools' improvement. Right now underway, an inspection of children's safeguarding services, and that was judged as inadequate in January 2013. And what that is what services the island offers to vulnerable island children. And meanwhile, Island Roads continuing to roll out its PFI programme 14 months into a 25-year contract. The Isle of Wight reshuffle, gentlemen, discuss.
Oh, I'd rather go last, please, Mark.
Well, I'll come in on this one. So I don't want to really get engaged in the personalities. I've got to say that Unison's had a good relationship, actually, with this council since it was elected. I think the way in which it's opened itself up in terms of attempting to take on board the views of the workforce is something that is a helpful development and is seen as such by the trade unions and staff generally. So I'd want to go on record in saying that. And in many ways, I'm sorry that Richard Priest isn't going to be there, because I think he's one of those who's been, again, quite open and transparent in terms of the way he's dealt with things. But the trade unions and Unison within that will, you know, look to develop relationships with whoever is an executive member and establish those relationships. I think the key thing, as far as we're concerned, though, is that the council does deal with the massive budget crisis that it's got looming, with massive implications for services and jobs and the Isle of Wight economy and care services, in an open and transparent way with us. We don't have any magic wand on it. There's not an easy answer. The council is already almost down to half the size in terms of disposable income that it was a few years ago, and with 28 million coming off, that's got massive implications for not just care services, libraries, leisure, you name it. There's an implication there. Whoever is leading the council, whoever the leading personalities are, we want to be involved with them in discussions, discuss the implications and discuss ways in which we can put pressure on central government to better recognise the needs of the Isle of Wight in terms of service delivery. I'm sorry that the changes have happened, but that happens in a democracy, and we're there and we will work with, if necessary, against whichever councillors emerge.
We're told it was threats to the administration, and it was Ian Stevens' decision, Steve. But I mean, what do you know about why those changes were made?
Oh, you've really put me on the spotlight there. There is a scrutiny call-in on the capital contingency paper, which appears to be at the centre of this issue. That's happening on the 2nd of October. Councillor Lumley has offered me an opportunity to speak at that call-in because I am centrally involved in some of the issues. I would probably, if you're OK with this, Lucy, prefer not to say more about that specifically at this time. But I would invite you to come along, because I think the meeting will be very interesting. The quicker we get this issue out of the way, the better, because then we can get on with doing the things that we've been elected to do. I'll be really pleased to have an opportunity to be involved in this whole thing coming out in the wash at that meeting. And I think it's going to be interesting. I think there are some facts that haven't yet been released to the public, and probably it's time that they were. So provided scrutiny are going to ask the right questions, and I've no reason to suppose otherwise, there will certainly be some new and interesting facts become available in relation to this issue at that meeting.
It is bad timing, though, isn't it?
There would never be a good time for something like this to happen. Of course, I would echo the compliments that have been paid to Councillor Priest in the role that he's played with his colleagues in Hampshire, who, as you know, we were under a ministerial directive to enter into an agreement, a partnership with. They've done a good job. The Ofsted has been good. How the GCSE results eventually pan out against national averages, we have to wait and see. But I think it's hugely disappointing, and nobody likes to lose colleagues from a group that's that small and has worked well together. But sometimes things happen, and as Mark says, you just move on from it.
In the break, we were talking about the floating bridge. It's not forgotten. Don't worry. We will come back on the Friday report and talk floating bridge. It is one of the big issues of the week, and we know that. Don't worry. We are going to talk about it very soon right here on the Friday report. But the other issue that has arisen is the future of the Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service. Definitely not a merger.
Yeah. definitely not. Phil Jordan was absolutely emphatic about that. My understanding is that this is one of the, and it's already been brought up by both of my colleagues, we currently face a huge funding gap, and we have to look for imaginative ways of filling that. The government is not providing local authorities with the kind of money that they're used to receiving grant funding. So clearly, we need to look at every business case that's presented to us in terms of how we might better provide services at a lower cost.
Does the island get an allowance for being an island? You can't just ship fire engines in from the next county.
We wish we got an allowance for being an island, don't we, David?
We do, we do. Next, and now that Ian's got this role in London, you never know, eh? Let's be optimistic.
In terms of the, you know, closer working between Hampshire and the Isle of Wight in terms of the fire service, I mean, formal talks between senior managers and the trade unions have begun on those, because it will have some implication for some jobs. I think in terms of the direct, you know, provision of services, I mean, my understanding is that in terms of firefighters, in terms of appliances, engines, etc., those will not be, you know, directly affected. But plainly, yes, it will have implications in terms of some of the support staff behind the scenes. And that is something that we are anxious to address, because, you know, we were already in a situation where unemployment on the Isle of Wight is extremely high. We can't afford to lose any jobs, and those support staff are providing a great backup service for their colleagues. So we want to know what the full implications of that are. We have been promised full consultation. I've got a diary full of meetings projected for the next few months, and we'll look to utilise those. We, as I say, we're assured that it's a working together, and that the safety of the Isle of Wight residents won't be compromised. But I'll be frank, Unison does have some concerns about the longer term implications in terms of jobs and employment.
And may I add, Lucy, as chair of the joint consultation meeting, and Mark and I get on well on that. I think it's, I thank you for your compliments and with regard to the way that the new administration is keen to work with staff. We all believe that it is extraordinarily important to keep staff on board, especially at times like this. And that's why we intend to have full consultation with staff in regard to any major changes that may come about.
Well, that's helpful. I don't want to conduct negotiations over the air, because it's not of abiding interest to many of your listeners. But at the same time, what we can't get away from is, because of some of the funding cutbacks, there are major worries in the council about future job losses. Pay levels have been massively eroded. We've got huge numbers of low-paid staff, many of them working in some of the vital care sectors, and workloads are greater than they've ever been. I'm not sitting here and saying that Steve's thought or his colleagues thought, but there are some key issues there that need to be addressed, and people under pressure as never before.
And David, I think, did you want to make one final point?
I just thought that there's a link back to the first point we were discussing about Scotland and about political engagement and community engagement on key issues. And one of the things that I think is really impressive about the Isle of Wight is that, you know, we're all aware of the budget challenges that are ahead of us. And every so often, and a lot of it is down thanks to the radio and the local press and all the rest of it, you know, there will become big discussions, passionate discussions about car parking charges after 6 o'clock, or about whether we should passengers have to pay for the chain ferries, or, you know, should this service merger or that merger, you know. But what Steve says is absolutely right. You know, you've got to look at everything, haven't you? If you're going to solve the problem, you've got to look at everything. And I think it's really healthy that everybody gets involved in these debates. And, you know, we have a radio station which, you know, the vast majority of the island tune into. We have a newspaper that the vast majority of the island read. And all of that is part of this healthy democracy that we've got on the island. So, you know, I know we're always doing ourselves down, but, you know, sometimes, you know, it's healthy to pull these things apart, redeploy your resources, look at things from a different angle. You have to do that in business all the time to keep ahead and to keep healthy. And I think it's right that politicians do that too.
All right. Well, I think we're going to move on. Just keeping an eye on the time here. We definitely want to get to tourism. As I say, don't forget you can tweet us hashtag Friday Report. Head to @iWhiteRadio. Alternatively, find us on the text as well. IW space message 81222.
The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. So heading towards 2 o'clock. Tom Stroud on the radio after 2 o'clock today. In the meantime, we are talking some of the big issues of the week here on the Isle of Wight with Mark Chiverton, Steve Stubbings and David Thornton. David, it's over to you for this one, really. Summer season on the Isle of Wight. We have kind of reached that point now. Bestival's finished. We're here mid-September time. Is that it now? Have we finished and how was it?
Oh, crikey. No, we can't finish yet. We have to keep going. Years and years ago, I used to work in Blackpool and we used to get to August Bank Holiday and we'd look at our takings year to date. And because of the Blackpool illumination season, we would say, we're going to take, we know that we're now halfway through and we're going to take the same money again. Now, wouldn't that be great on the Isle of Wight? You know, I mean, extending the season is what we are, you know, trying to do everywhere. But, you know, like all these things, you have to do it by degrees. So what sort of a year? Well, roller coaster, talking to Blackpool, it's been a bit of a white knuckle ride because January and February, pouring with rain, ferry cancellations, railway stations flooded, you know, all sorts of things going on. Most of the south of England didn't get out of bed for 2 months, didn't book any holidays, very slow start. We got into the acoustic aisle period. We were doing that with our good friends here at the radio in March, and the sun started to come out, things dried up. Easter was very strong. Many of our tourist attractions reported their best ever Easter. Isle of Wight Steam Railway was one of those that had a fantastic time. May was a bit flat. June was up. Isle of Wight Festival performed very well. It's got its mojo back, no doubt about it. July, first part of July was weird. I had a phone call from the Lazy Wave Cafe down on Shanklin Seafront. See what I did there? Gave him a plug for free. he said, David, the sun's out. You know, the beach is looking gorgeous and there's nobody on it. What's going on? You know, what are you guys doing wrong? And we looked into all this, as you might imagine. And one of the issues that's come out, and I mentioned this to Ian Stevens, funnily enough, about this new chairman role, because the government is really cracking down on these penalties for taking kids out of school. You know, and I understand why, you know, and but there's got to be a balance here. You know, there are a lot of poorer families who traditionally used to come to the Isle of Wight in the first half of July and enjoy cheaper breaks on the island, and they are now being fined or threatened with fines for doing that. And what it's done is it was a problem, perhaps, with hindsight. We perhaps should have forecast this coming, but I don't think anybody really appreciated how severe and big an issue it was going to be in the first half of July. What we've now got to do is find an alternative market for that. But second half of July, very strong, very fantastic. August, terrific. First half of September, very good. Bestival again, very strong. So we've got Isle of Fright coming up. We've got Shades of Wight, Autumn Breaks. We've got New Year, New You. Then we're back into Acoustic Isle.
It doesn't stop, does it?
It doesn't stop. It keeps rolling.
I mean, very quickly, just, I don't know if Mark or Steve, you want to just come back on that. Just literally about 30 seconds each. We've got a thought.
I'll take 10 seconds to pick up on one thing that David said, which I absolutely agree with him about. I think the government hasn't really thought through the implications of this new business about taking kids out of school. I think that needed to be discussed and thought about much, much more carefully than it was. Yeah. And I'd like us to revisit that.
I think we definitely will revisit that because there's a no-tolerance policy here on the Isle of Wight, and it is arguable about whether or not there needs to be a no-tolerance policy here on the Isle of Wight. Yeah. So we definitely will come back and visit that.
Yeah, I've got sympathy with those views as well. I think it is one different, you know, an entirely different situation dealing with, you know, a family that doesn't get children into school. But I think some families are quite badly penalised. Just to go back into the list of events and things that David was talking about, a very impressive list and I think that's absolutely great to hear that, just a list of the number of things that are going on. And anyway, there's a thread through all of this as well, that there are great initiatives. David and his team do great work in terms of attracting people to the Isle of Wight. Absolutely applaud that. But it is also important as well that we don't neglect our public services, because if there's not that background in terms of clean beaches, decent parks and work, then our island is not going to be as attractive.
Absolutely.
Mark Chiverton from Unison, Steve Stubbings, Deputy Leader of the Isle of Wight Council, David Thornton, Visit Isle of Wight. There was never going to be enough time. Thank you very much for joining me in the studio. And we will have you all back again very, very soon. I'm just going to leave you with a little bit of audio. This is a four-year-old boy who's become the youngest to complete the Three Hills Killer Challenge. It's a cycling challenge, 13 miles cross-country, 3 hours and 9 minutes, a faster time than some adults. Any takers here for that particular challenge?
It's very impressive, that is.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well done, little fella.
Impressive, you know, he's got more energy. I was struggling even to get here this morning.
I fell off my bike.
Let's hear from little Harrison.
You go down fast, you go back, then you go forward, and you need a helmet on, and you need some gloves on, special gloves. I got knee brake. And he changed my pedals, but they've gone wrong again. They're still dirty.
There you go. He's got some new brakes, but he needs some new pedals. That's all it takes, gentlemen. I don't know what you're all complaining about. Thank you very much for joining me. Tom Stroud on the radio after 2 o'clock today, and a little bit delayed 2 o'clock news bulletin with John Weeks. We will have another Friday report, same time next Friday, between 1 and 2, right here on Isle of Wight Radio. And don't forget, you can have your say whenever we have these discussions. It's all about you. So think about your questions for next week. I'll see you then.
The Friday Report, getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio.